And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to 2020 and a whole new episode of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. I know it's been a while since you've heard from my lovely voice last. Well, nothing much has really changed in my life.
I just did lots of crying in the fetal position, normal stuff, you know.
Mostly over hockey.
No, not really. Just okay. Well, keep in mind, our last episode was October 29th, so we've done 2 months off, essentially, for the holidays. And, like, 2 months prior to our last episode was when I got laid off from my job.
True.
I worked some temp jobs, one for a media marketing company that I really liked, and I did that for 5 weeks. And then I did 3 days at another place that was not a good fit. So, and that ended the week before Christmas. So I essentially got like 2.5 more weeks off. Nice. So I'm back on the grind trying to find work, and because my severance expires at the end of March. So
I took like my remaining vacation days, cause I started like mid like in July. So I had like tons of vacation days left over. So I was like, cool, I'll take Christmas and New Year's off. But now I'm back, but I will be doing some traveling, mostly to Comic-Cons, so that is not work-related, but still fabulous.
Yeah, because we also submitted panels for AwesomeCon, obviously, and for me, AwesomeMania 8, and yep. Also Nerdy Notions has been submitted.
Yep, so hopefully that'll work out, and I will also be in GalaxyCon February 29th in Richmond, Virginia. So that should be fun. They asked me back.
Golf claps.
But for this episode, we're going to start kind of, I think that's like, I have not had any major highlights other than getting a really beautiful corset that I finally got in the right size, but that's a separate conversation. I guess we're going
to Well, we are going to talk about medieval stuff later.
Later, we'll get to that.
But one thing that did come out
that I have is not a medieval corset; it is a Victorian corset. There's a very big difference.
People still wear Victorian corsets to medieval Ren fairs, anyways. But I think the biggest, well, two big things happened since the last time we were on air, and that was the release of Disney Plus, and Baby Yoda, the Mandalorian. Which funny story about the name Baby Yoda, because apparently that's a big no-no in Disney corporate. And Rise of Skywalker came out to end the Skywalker trilogy, or Skywalker saga, my bad.
Did not see it. Have no desire to see it.
I saw it. Okay, let me put it in perspective like this. I saw it. I personally enjoyed it. I liked how they wrapped things up and just kind of put it away. I wasn't a fan of Rian Johnson's Last Jedi. I still enjoyed it. I like J.J. Abrams better, because it felt like with Last Jedi, Johnson was trying to undo everything that Abrams did and try to redo everything. And then Abrams is essentially trying to go, well, crap. I was trying to set this map course to go this direction, and then you come in and kind of screw it up a little bit. So what Abrams did was is that he actually openly admitted in interviews recently that what they essentially did was, like, they had to tinker with a few things to make it work within the story that Abrams was trying to tell, but also certain things that Johnson did, like about Rey's parents. He wasn't expecting Johnson to do what he did. So he had to try to find a way to do this bigger twist about Rey's parents and stuff like that, which is how you got what you got in the film. And apparently there's several deleted scenes about Palpatine.
Cool.
So
look, I was like, I enjoy the Star Wars movies. I really don't quite understand what the hype is about. Like, they're fine movies. That's about it.
They're space dramas.
They're space soap operas. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's like there's like space politics and there's space fantasy. Star Wars is more space fantasy than space politics, and I like Star Trek space politics better. Yeah. Sorry, I'm a Trekkie. Live long and prosper. I don't care. But But with all of that in mind, there are two Star Wars movies, well, one and a half, I'll get to that in a second, that I actually genuinely enjoyed. One, I actually enjoyed Rogue One.
Rogue One is fantastic movie. A lot of people consider that the best Star Wars film because it has nothing to do with the Skywalkers, or it has nothing really to do with the whole saga, even though it actually plays an integral part going into Episode 4.
But, exactly, and like it was like the highest budget to how did Honest Trailers describe it? Like something about like the highest gross, like the most expensive plot hole fixer or something like that. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. The ending was, you know, kind of obvious, but still very powerful. The half is because it's technically not a movie, but it sort of feels like a movie. And that is, of course, to lead into Disney Plus, The Mandalorian.
Yes.
And not being a huge Star Wars fan, I had no expectations for it. I was like, okay, my mom, you know, we were like, okay, we'll give it a try. And it was actually really good.
Well,
the acting is amazing.
And do you know who's behind it?
J.J. Abrams?
No.
Who?
John Favreau.
Oh, duh. I did know that. John Favreau.
Because in this part of our conversation stemmed off from what you posted on Facebook.
Yeah.
About merchandise. Merchandise. Yeah. Merchandise. Merchandise.
Merchandising. Facebook.
But because you're going like, oh, Disney made a blunder with the whole Baby Yoda, Yoda merchandise.
Other people explain that it was actually a strategic decision, and there's like reasons behind it.
Yeah, and what it is that Jon Favreau, who pretty much has the keys to the city of Disney, because obviously Iron Man kicking off the MCU, Elf, and many other things that he's done, and then he does The Mandalorian, and everyone goes and they look at The Mandalorian and go, this is more Star Wars than Star Wars is. And one of the biggest things is that apparently I'm going to probably missay the guy's name, but Bill Iger, the CEO of Disney, he was saying in an interview that he actually got yelled at by Favreau for calling Baby Yoda Baby Yoda. And he's like, no, it is the child or it is the asset. It is not Baby Yoda.
Like, I know it's not, like, literally Baby Yoda, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm sorry, but in the most, like, I've seen these posts all over social media where, like, Star Wars is, like, super detailed and everything has a backstory. There is no species name for Yodas.
Yeah. So, like, well, listen, Kevin is a good substitute name for now. So
unless John Favreau personally comes to me and tells me to not say it, I'm going to keep calling you Baby Yoda. But that's like a Baby Yoda, not the baby, not like Yoda the baby.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is that, like, we actually find out that, or we found out through other interviews that Carl Weathers' character, you're going to find out more and more about his character in season 2. They're going to go more in depth about his history and do more character development on that. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's also what happens. Like, you found out a little bit about, you know, the child, the asset, Baby Yoda, whatever you want to call it, in the last episode, when the armor was telling the Mandalorian what it was essentially, which is essentially like a space wizard or a sorcerer. But yeah, so we'll find out in fall 2020 of this year, because that's when season 2 is going to come out.
All right, so before this entire episode turns into a Star Wars fest, let's talk briefly about Disney Plus and then dive into the real subject matter of this episode. So Disney Plus launched on November 11th?
12th,
same thing. And I actually genuinely enjoy the content. I enjoyed The Mandalorian. I'm going to get flagged for this, but I actually really enjoyed High School Musical, the musical, the series. All of the side characters, 100%, are way more interesting than the two main leads, but I think that was true with the original High School Musical as well.
Yeah, I got it a few days later because I got it in conjunction when I upgraded my phone, because thank you, Verizon, for my free year. but Sasha's flicking me off. But
I was going to say something along the lines of, like, this video is not sponsored in any way by Verizon or Disney.
No, it's not sponsored by Verizon at all, especially the fact that my internet's not Verizon, but just my phone. But no, I've watched The Mandalorian. I love Mandalorian. I have a bunch of stuff on my watch list. Like, obviously, I watched 92 X-Men.
Oh, so the good.
Animated series, which that is completely out of order.
Yeah, I tweeted to Disney and they fixed it. Hopefully, yeah. They fixed it. Did they fix it?
I don't think so. No, I think the way they fixed it was they didn't move the episodes in the listing, but you know how, like, after you watch an episode and it goes into the end credits, it'll minimize the end credits scene and then bring up the next episode?
Yes.
I think that's how they fixed it.
Okay, I guess that's one way to fix it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, like, the good of Disney Plus, and then we'll talk about some of the faults that they have to work on.
The good is the content. But
90s Spider-Man, 90s X-Men,
Gargoyles.
DuckTales, Gargoyles.
Actually, I haven't sat down and watched it yet. It's on my watch list. But I want to watch the Jeff Goldblum show. The World According to Jeff Goldblum.
I know
episode 9 just came out, and I haven't watched any of the episodes yet.
I don't do reality shows.
Like, yeah, but it's Jeff Goldblum.
I know, but even if they're quirky and happy reality shows, like one of the other shows is called Encore, which is narrated by Kristen Bell, woohoo. Where they get, like, different, like, people who did that show in high school to do it, like, many years later. And I watched a couple episodes, and it's good. It's genuinely good. It's really interesting. But I cannot do reality shows. Like, I can't. It's not my thing.
Yeah. Going on to the bad, because obviously the good thing is, like, oh, my God, look at all this content that we have.
So Disney, one of the things that really bugs me is that you can't search for tags like you can on Netflix. So, like, I can type in, like, it doesn't work as well. And my other gripe is I cannot just click next on an episode. I actually have to wait until the credits, or I have to exit the video in order to get to the next episode.
Well, that's what I was getting to. Like, autoplay would be a really great feature. Because, like, I'm binge watching The Simpsons right now, and I'm all the way up to season 12 now, and you could tell I've had a lot of free time on my hands if I'm binge watching 30 seasons worth of The Simpsons. But watch, as soon as we're done recording, I'm going to be turning back on Disney Plus and binge watching The Simpsons as I edit these episodes. So, but an autoplay feature would be nice.
Yeah.
You can, I mean, I do agree, it kind of stinks that you got to wait for the credits to come up to do the minimize so you can move to the next scene. What I also like, though, is that, like, especially, like, for Mandalorian, because there's only 8 episodes to watch right now, and I do go back and I watch it, because I've already seen the entire season, like, maybe 3 times already. Again, too much free time. Like, if you hit play while the credits are rolling, and then you later on go back to watch that episode or movie or whatever, you should have it be able to start at the beginning of the film or show and not start in the credits.
Where you want us to remember the magic of rewinding.
Yeah. But another thing is that, and this is my biggest gripe, don't advertise stuff that's not going to be available to watch.
Thank you.
Because... Yes.
I got excited because, what was it? The Mighty Ducks was on Disney Plus. Oh, I'm going to watch. Oh, it's not available until later.
No. Hold on. So you have Mighty Ducks, the animated series, available.
No, I meant the movie.
I know. Hold on. Mighty Ducks, the animated series, is available, which is a good series, and it only was one season. The animated movie is not available at all, but luckily I still have that on VHS. You remember those, right?
Yes, thank you, Grandpa. I remember VHS. I still have a working VHS at home.
But then, as you're saying, the actual Mighty Ducks. The first Mighty Ducks movie is not available until, I believe, July of this year.
And the second one isn't...
The second and the third are not available until January 1st of 2021.
What?
Yep. I are just... You- Georgia the Jungle is not available until May of 2020.
Seriously, like, Disney, really, we don't need to know these things. Like,
we don't
need to do this. This is just teasing.
Like, I like the fact that you could put it on your watch list and then they'll let you know when it's available to watch, which is nice. But at the same time, if it's not going to be available for a full year,
don't make it come up on the search feature.
Or
in the menu to watch.
Or maybe have it put it into the library that people can see maybe like 30 days before.
Or something like available. Coming soon.
Yeah, like a coming soon section. Yeah, that would be great. But like, but they'll tell you, oh, because of a pre-existing agreement. I know for a fact that the pre-existing agreement for Mighty Ducks is HBO. Because that's that's the streaming service that's available on right now for HBO. I know because I went on to HBO and I found it there. So, but like Georgia the Jungle, I think is through like another one or something like that. I don't know what channel or whatever it's through. But yeah, it's so frustrating. You see them, you get excited for it and you're like, oh, yay.
Yep.
But apparently stuff has disappeared too.
Really?
Yeah. A couple the Home Alone movies came down.
I think we were only up for the holidays.
Yeah, but that's a common fear, though. It's like, because keep in mind, what's the greatest Christmas movie of all time? Die Hard.
Oh, of course.
They didn't put it up on Disney Plus.
Is that a Disney movie?
It's Fox. Home Alone is Fox.
I wish there was like a way to like sort out like PG-13 movies. Just because like when I type in like a romance or like a romantic movie and like all of these Disney princess movies come up or whatever, I'm like, no, that's not what I meant. Not that rom-coms are generally PG-13, but this is like something you don't have to do necessarily. Like I can live without it, but it would be nice. But that also means that like they do need to improve, I think, the search feature. And I think they've kind of like started doing it. And you know, this is like, we're only 3 months in, not even 3 months. We're like almost 2 months into this. So there's going to be glitches. There's going to be stuff that like, you know, Netflix, when it first started doing streaming was not, you know, they also had a way to go. Same thing with Amazon Prime. Like there's ways to improve that will happen gradually with updates and things. But overall, I enjoyed it. It's been fun playing the Does This Hold Up game. Impossible still holds up.
Wait, which one? Wait, what was the first one that you said?
Impossible. Lizzie McGuire. I'm too old for it, but I'm sure the kids will enjoy it. So it's been a fun little nostalgia trip. I love the fact that like there's a lot of like good nostalgia trips going on.
Disney's Three Musketeers with Chris O'Donnell, Kiefer Sutherland, Oliver Platt, and Charlie Sheen.
I haven't been able to get through it. I'm too stuck on the Salvia version. But that's because that's the version I grew up with. But I did get to watch Disney's Robin Hood, the 1950s or 1970s.
The cartoon, the animated one? Yeah.
I got to rewatch Atlantis: The Lost Empire, and it looks so good. Oh, I love that movie so much.
I know that's the one everyone's asking for the live action remake for.
That and Treasure Planet.
Yeah.
So that's been fun. I got to watch there's a new movie that I highly, highly recommend. It's called Togo.
I thought that was a series.
Nope, it's a
movie. No, it's a movie, and that stars William Dafoe.
Yes. And so it's about the dog sled team and the man whose name escapes me right now, who did the largest and most dangerous trek of this like.
And that's where the story of Balto came out of too, right?
Yes. So the thing is with Balto is Balto got the credit because he was the one that made it to town. And that's not to like, hate on Balto, because Balto did cross very dangerous terrain as well. But it's like 130 miles difference to like 1300 mile difference, something like that. It's a very big difference. And because Balto was the one that helped deliver the medicine directly to the town, he got all the credit. But Togo And bear in mind, this takes place in 1925, and Togo was named after the Japanese emperor that has no relation to the United States at that point. And it does the most dangerous trek of the journey. I mean, this poor dog gets so hurt, and like the thing that this dog faces, and the friendship that Togo has with William Dafoe's character is just, this movie made me cry. Y'all do not understand how much it takes for a movie to make me cry. I do not cry. I did not cry at The Notebook. I did not cry in Titanic. Like, I do not cry at movies.
You heartless, heartless person.
I have no soul. It's okay. I got a little teary-eyed when it came to Coco because the ending of Coco was like so good, and it's such a sweet movie. And I almost completely bawled my eyes out watching Togo, but well, as close as I can get to bawling my eyes out, but there were tears. Like, I had to pause and be like, holy crap, this movie made me cry. Well, sort of cry. Anyway, so anything else you want to add to Disney Plus before we get to
since we're on the talk about crying during movies, I will admit, in theaters, Ralph Breaks the Internet, I did start crying at the end of the movie. But also, you got to put this in perspective. This is also the same year my best friend had passed away.
Okay, fair.
So if you've watched the end of Ralph Breaks the Internet, or if you've seen the movie, period, you would know that at the end of the movie, Vanellope and Ralph split ways. She stays in the internet at that deaf racing game, whereas he goes back to the arcade. And it's like a really touching moment. And like a lot of the stuff that's talked about, it's just like, damn it. And I say that too, because this past Friday was his birthday. This upcoming Friday, the 10th, is the 2-year anniversary of his passing. Aww. So, you know, it's like, so being able to, you know, it's like, you know, just being in that moment, watching the movie at that time with that type of what was being talked about. And, you know, it just kind of, you know, it hits you in the heartstrings and you start crying. Then you have a whole bunch of like kids around you because you're the only adult there by yourself. And you're crying and all the kids are going, Mommy, what's wrong with that guy? He's crying like a little pussy, you know? but.
Sure.
But you talked about Netflix.
Hmm?
Talked about Netflix.
Yeah.
Because the rival, The Mandalorian, which is everyone's love show, there's another love show starring Henry Cavill.
Ah, yes.
The Witcher.
I have watched one episode, one and a quarter episodes of, and you have not seen. Okay, so I...
For the record, I don't have Netflix.
And I just don't care. Like, honestly, I'm so bored with the show. And it's not the show's fault. It's really not. I'm sure, like, plenty of people enjoy it. It's like Game of Thrones. It's their thing. It's not my thing. So with that in mind, I did see the first episode. And the first, like, quarter. I can't. It's too fantasy and it's too medieval. And I'm not a big fan of things that takes place in, like, rinky-dink towns during the 11th century or wherever.
Whereas I like that stuff. But yet again, I go to Ren Fairs because I'm a loser, but you know.
Like, I like Ren Fairs, but I can't with this. Like, I don't even do King Arthur. Like, I'm sorry. It's just, it's not my thing.
What about Braveheart?
No.
No.
Mostly because Mel Gibson, but.
Before the whole crap from Mel Gibson.
There was no before, so. Anyway, so, but what we do know about The Witcher is that it is a show that has very powerful female characters, and there are some characters who are female and who happens to be sword-wielding females.
And they kick ass.
Apparently. But The Witcher is not exactly the topic of this podcast, as you've seen from the description. It's actually about a man named Andrew Clavin who works at the Daily Wire.
Yeah. And I'm reading directly from Newsweek, the Newsweek article that prompted our conversation on Facebook about this. So conservative commentator and novelist, We'll get to that part a little bit later because I found the little novelist part a little hilarious because it's at the bottom of the article. Andrew Klavan criticized fictional Netflix show The Witcher Thursday for featuring women with swords, insisting zero women can fight with a sword. Sir, I can tell you right now, you are so wrong, because I have fought, albeit with foam padded weapons, I have fought women with swords and they have brutally annihilated me.
But here's the thing. His commentary is insane. And it comes, I don't even know what it is, because not only is his point historically accurate, it's just plain inaccurate.
Before we go to the clip,
yes.
Let's talk about the segment a little bit deeper. So during a segment about feminism on his latest edition of the Andrew Klavan Show podcast, on the Daily Wire, it became clear that The Witcher's fantasy portrayal of a queen adept at sword fighting struck a nerve with him. The erstwhile mystery author seemed particularly upset that the character used a sword in a way he considered to be like a man. We do have audio of what he actually said. So, Sasha, do you want to do a little preface going into this?
Here's Andrew Klavan with his moronic commentary.
And so the lady who made the show, the showrunner, Lauren Schmidt-Hissrich, announced she was going to pay attention to the women. And immediately I was put off by the fact that there's a queen in this who fights like a man. And there's a couple of scenes where women fight with swords. And I just hate these scenes because no woman can fight with a sword. Zero women can fight with a sword. And what I mean by that is, in a situation where you are fighting men who are used to fighting with swords, you are going to get killed if you were a woman fighting with a sword 100% of the time, right? Now, you can, a woman with a sword could kill somebody. A woman with a sword could kill somebody who doesn't know how to fight with a sword. But in a war situation where you are swinging this 5 to 10 pound sword again and again and again against much, much, much stronger men, they are going to kill you. So when you write a woman who fights with a sword, and this queen is, she's a man. They should have made the character a man. She's a man. She's gross, and she swaggers around, and she rips into the meat and tears it with her teeth, and then curses people out. She's a man. So it was this feminist statement. And I just thought, please give me a break. And I don't know if that's in the book, in the books, but I just thought, give me a break. This is not the way any woman behaves.
All right, so we heard his comments, and
Let's start with the fact that not only is he wrong, he's historically wrong. Because look, I did see the first episode, which does have the sword wielding queen, and like, she's not the first woman to put on armor and use a sword. First of all, I'm pretty sure there's a movie with Whoopi Goldberg where there's like a black knight, and it's either in that or it's a Kid in King Arthur's Court. One of them has a knight who's like super awesome, super badass, and it turns out the knight is a girl.
Well, not only that, but also Game of Thrones, Gwendolyn Christie's character.
There's like a whole bunch of women that wield swords in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
As far as I know. But even like, these are still fictional examples. Let's look at real history. What is the first name when you think of sword wielding woman that comes up?
Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc. And Joan of Arc was also not like an adult woman. She was a teenager. She was, what, 17. You also have, let's see, a female samurais, and there's only like only known female samurai in Japan, in the history of Japan. I actually have a thing called, this article's from Mental Floss, and it says 9 female warriors who made their mark on history. So the Japanese warrior's name is, I apologize if I butcher this, Nakano Takeko. You also have Tomoe Gozen, which is someone who predates the previous person. You have Queen Boadicea, who was the wife of a Celtic tribe, wife of the king of the Celtic tribe. You have someone named Grace O'Malley, who was a 16th century warrior woman / Irish pirate. Let's talk about female pirates. You have Apache warrior women. You have someone called Zenobia, who even assassinated her husband and stepson. She lived in what is now Syria. And so these are just like historical examples. And like, this is not even counting just like female warriors, regardless of sword fighting, like Lyudmila Pavlichenko, who was, you know, the Soviet female sniper.
Yeah. And one of the things here is that one of his also biggest points is that Klavan suggested that he felt it was impossible for any woman to successfully fight a man with a sword because all men are not much stronger, but much, much, much stronger.
Okay,
than any woman.
Like, from a physical standpoint, that might be true on average.
But he tries to clarify this in two different ways. I'm going to read his quote in the article, and then I'm going to read the tweet that you sent me. You'll read the tweet. I'll read the article bit first. Because he does allow for the possibility of a woman with a sword potentially killing an unspecified person without sword fighting knowledge. But okay. But his actual quote is, "What I mean by that is in a situation where you are fighting men who are used to fighting with swords, you're going to get killed if you're a woman fighting with a sword 100% of the time."
Yeah, Joe Klavan got killed in a sword battle. Mm-hmm.
He continues, "A woman with a sword could kill somebody who doesn't know how to fight with a sword, but in a war situation where you're swinging this 5 to 10 pound sword, first off, swords are heavier than that.
Hashtag Joan of Arc could kick your ass.
Yeah, again and again and again against much, much, much stronger men, they are going to kill you." The host was also apparently disgusted by the character because he found her to be too much like a man.
So here, again, I hate this concept that any female warrior is somehow the like equivalent of a man. There was an article, when was it? One second, let me pull it up because I have the article. From like 2017, from Louder with Crowder, where this female author claimed that, let me see if I can find the quote. She said that because men were action heroes, women insisting they do it too for the sake of equality and is pathetic copying. It's actual gender appropriation, whatever the hell that means. By insisting women should do what men did first for the simple reason of just, we want to do it because the men did it, undermines the base of idea feminism. Bear with me for a second. But then she goes to say that she doesn't have a problem with women being heroic. Oh no. But apparently women are heroes, but they need to be heroic in their own way. And then she goes on to, I think, echo what Klavan is saying, which is that she says most women aren't physically strong as most men. Therein lies the greatest reason women cannot be credible, believable action heroes. Action heroes, as in being heroes via their action through their raw physical strength and the capacity for swift violence, that's not what action heroes are, but okay. All of which are prerequisites for action hero status. To you feminists who want to make women action heroes, stop it. You're actually doing women a great disservice and reinforcing horrible and unattainable goal. In order for a woman to be heroic and a strong woman, she has to have the physical strength of a man and exact physical violence on men. Cropping your hair short and wearing men's clothes isn't the same thing. So first of all, not every woman needs to dress up as a man and join the army. So that's number one. And we'll get to Andrew's response tweet to the video that was posted, or to the video that someone took off of his.
Jason Campbell was the person who tweeted it.
So let's talk about female action heroes. The best example of the nail in both their coffins is Wonder Woman. First of all, created by a man. Second of all, can kick everybody's butt several times over. Even Superman's, I think, at one point. But she does not fight like a man. She fights like a woman because she was raised by women in a society of women. So their points are just invalid based on her alone. But action can be physical and it can be violent, but it doesn't necessarily have to be physical. A woman does not necessarily need to punch a man to be an action hero. There's different ways to fight. Primary example, the Scarlet Witch, who is arguably one of the most powerful characters in all of MCU and in comics in general, or at least at Marvel. She fights with her magic, with her powers. She is still powerful. And although I'm not a big fan of Carol Danvers, she's also a powerful female because of her unique powers. But none of these things make them male. None of this is saying that, like, that there's just so much wrong with this.
And before you go on to his quote on Twitter, Let me piggyback off of that, where this is Clavin's comments about the queen. The queen is, she's a man. They should have made the character a man. She's a man. She's gross. And she swaggers around. She rips into the meat and tears it with her teeth and, you know, and then and curses people out. She's a man. Let me scroll down because advertisements. While he admitted to not having read the popular series of books the show is based on.
Neither have I. That's not a prerequisite.
Yeah, Clavin bemoaned that The Witcher was attempting to make a feminist statement by including the character based on his opinions about the proper behavior of women. Which is, so, like, it was this feminist statement, and I'm like, please give me a break, he complained. And I don't know if that's in the books, but I just thought, give me a break, this is not the way any woman behaves.
So, first of all, just because it's not a way a woman you've met behaves, Andrew, does not mean Jack. Second of all, I watched the first episode, which had the sword-wielding queen, and I actually thought it was a rather refreshing take. Like, oh, she's the one that did all this. She's not just ruling the kingdom because her husband died or whatever. That's actually kind of refreshing. You don't see a lot of that. Additionally, like, I'm just picturing, as he's talking, I'm picturing Joan of Arc. I'm picturing Mulan. Like, has he seriously, and first, forget even both of those. Has he not seen Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon? Like,
he comes off as the type of person where if he sees anything with a strong female lead that can kick ass, he's threatened. But the way it's presented on the posters and stuff like that in the trailers, she's presented as a strong female lead who can kick ass. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of those people who sees that type of stuff and is threatened by it.
I mean,
especially just based off the way his comments are.
I'm very far from being the most feminist, woke feminist in the world. I fully admit that. I do not personally consider myself a feminist. But stuff like this just drives me insane because I feel like half the time it's done on purpose to get clicks and likes. I really truly hope that he doesn't actually believe this, but considering he replied to the criticism,
which you'll read in a moment.
This is what he said. All right, so deep breaths. He says, to be fair, in context, I was saying women couldn't sword fight with men trained for battle. That's a lie. He goes on to say, my larger point was that by depicting women doing things they wouldn't do in real life, writers know
Koto
to feminists by turning women into fake men and don't depict women as they are. First of all, there is no one way to be a woman. There is no way to be a woman. You cannot tell me that, like, Miss Universe is the same type of woman as Lyudmila Pavlichenko or the Queen of England versus, like, Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah, and not only that, but he also started the tweet off with the laughing emoji.
Yes, he did. So first, let's break this down. I was saying women couldn't sword fight with men trained in battle. Joan of Arc alone disproves your point.
Mulan
disproves your point. Any female action person from real life history just invalidates your point. My larger point was that depicting women doing the things they wouldn't do in real life, writers kowtow to feminists. No, like, I've seen this argument is rarely valid, in my opinion, to say that this is all just a way to, like, appeal to feminists and to seem woke or whatever. And there are, when that happens, it's very obvious because it's done to the point of insanity.
So, real quick, I'm pulling up the Witcher series on Wikipedia. Just to get an idea on it real quick. And according to Wikipedia and its description, The Witcher is a fantasy series of novels and short stories written by Polish author Andrzej Sapkowski. The series revolves around the Witcher, Geralt of Rivia, in Sapkowski's works, witchers are beast hunters who develop supernatural abilities at a young age to battle wild beasts and monsters. The books have been adapted into a film, The Hexer, two television series, The Hexer and the current Netflix series, The Witcher, three video games, The Witcher, The Witcher 2, Assassins of the Kings, and Witcher 3, Wild Hunt, and a graphic novel series. The series of novels is known as The Witcher Saga. The short stories and novels have been translated into numerous languages, including English, French, and Spanish. Let's see here. The first book came out in 2007, which was actually the short story collection.
Okay.
And then the short story collections was 2007 and 2015. The Witcher Saga started in 2008. Followed by books in 2013, 14, 16, 17, and 18. The Polish releases, however, were 93 originally for the short story collection and 94 or 92 for the short story collection and 94 for the books. So it actually took a while before it actually came over here to the United States.
Makes sense. That often happens.
Yeah. I'm just trying to find... Okay, I'm trying to find the character, because like the major characters, you have Yennefer Vangerberg.
So I think that the character he's talking about, the only queen I remember is the one of the characters, like grandma, who like, first of all, looks way too young to be a grandma.
Queen Calanthe?
Probably. I didn't pay attention long enough to learn their names, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
The point is like, she like leads the troops into battle, and she is like, I don't think she comes off like male. I think she just comes off as a war veteran who has been, you know, toughened by the realities of war. That happens to anyone, male or female, who goes through, you know, war. So you can, but let's focus more on this like aspect of this, where it says like, that the writers are just trying to like appeal to feminists by turning women into fake men and don't depict women as they are. And I think that goes back to the point I made. There is no one way to be a woman. One of the prime examples of this is actually in The Mandalorian. First of all, this is like wholly female characters, Batman. You have Gina Carano's character.
Cara Dune.
Cara Dune, and then you also have the female Mandalorian.
The armor
lady.
Which is played by Emily Swallow.
Yes. These are two very different women. And then you compare that to like Ming-Na Wen's very brief appearance.
And then not only that, but also in episode 4, when you also get introduced to Gina Carano's character, you also get introduced to that village, and there's the one thing where it's like, oh, we have to defend the village. Who here can shoot? And the only person who knows how to shoot is the lead woman of the village. And it's like, and I remember people bemoaning that. It's like, oh, go figure. The only person who can shoot in the village is a woman. And I'm like, so? It's a village that never needed anyone to shoot before.
Maybe she was taught by her great grandfather who just happened to be alive and wanted her to be prepared.
Yeah, it's like, you don't know what the backstory is of the character. And we may find out in the future. So
I gotta say, like, I really, really like Gina Carano. This was like, I saw her in Deadpool, and like, I was like, okay, it's an interesting character, but there wasn't much development. So it's like, okay, she's there. But I really enjoyed her character in The Mandalorian. I think she will have a very bright future in further Disney productions, I hope.
Did you see how she showed up on the red carpet for Mandalorian in the bell dress?
I did. She's so pretty.
Have you seen what everyone's asking Disney to have her casted as?
She-Hulk?
Yes. Could you see that one? Although, I also believe, what is it, Stephanie Ramirez from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I think it is? She's openly said that she really wants the role. So...
Honestly, I'm not particularly impressed with her as an actress. I think like granted, I've never seen her outside of Brooklyn 99, but to be perfectly honest, like, so far I'm not impressed, but that's just me personally.
Yeah.
She also said that she wanted to play America Chavez at one point, and, like, I think she just really wants a Marvel gig, regardless of the character.
Yeah, but, you know,
everybody wants a Marvel gig.
I want a Marvel gig, you want a Marvel gig.
This is true.
Yeah, but,
I don't necessarily want to be an actor.
You said the gig had to be acting.
This is true.
But, but the funny thing is that you, you mentioned the fact that there's no true definition of being what a woman is. There's no true definition of what being a man is either on the same token. But it's really funny because at the very end of the Newsweek article, it brings up a very funny point about, well, at least funny to me, about Klavan. Klavan began a successful career as a novelist before turning to the world of conservative commentary. His book, Mrs. White, which he wrote using the pseudonym Margaret Tracy, won the 1984 Edgar Award for Mystery Novels. He published a book under a woman's name.
Because, you know, men don't write mystery novels, apparently. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle need not apply, I guess.
So it's like, you go on about, like, all this feminism stuff and blah, 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 but you published a book under a woman's name.
Oh, it gets better. You want to hear the description of the book?
Go for it, because I don't have that.
You ready for this? In the suburb of Connecticut, our carpenter embarks on a gruesome killing spree. Well, gosh, you already told me who the killer is. Great job there. Well, she's preparing dinner for her husband. Mrs. Porter runs out of lemons. Driving to the supermarket, though, the achingly quaint downtown area of suburban Putnam Wells. Like, okay, she yearns for life in New York City. First of all, this takes place in a Connecticut suburb, so Mrs. Porter's husband is making bank. The Porters, moved to Connecticut because it was supposed to be safer, quieter, more predictable. What part of Connecticut is this? The imaginary kind? Until that afternoon, when she returns home and finds a madman waiting with a butcher's knife in his hand. He doesn't just kill Mrs. Porter. He takes his time, leaving behind a gory scene that would horrify even the hardest New York cop. The killer is Paul White, a local carpenter.
Wait. Hold on. The Big Show from WWE is the killer. Because his name is Paul White. Aha, I made a joke. But anyways, go on.
This is from Google Reads, by the way. And it says, the killer is Paul White, a local carpenter whose wife knows nothing about his thirst for blood. Mrs. White is an innocent who lives to make her husband and daughter happy. As she begins to see shadows of Paul's vicious side, she will learn just how twisted love can be. So wait, is it her husband that kills her? Yeah, Paul White, Mrs. White. Okay, no, he kills Mrs. Porter, and Mrs. White is apparently the clueless one about her husband. So explain to me why I would want to read this book. So first of all, this is a message to anybody who ever writes mystery novels. Do not tell me in the description of the book who the killer is. I will not read it. What is the point of me reading it if I already know who did it?
Hey, I just want you to know that I'm going to write a mystery comic, and I'm going to tell you in the first comic strip who the killer is.
That I'm the killer?
Yeah. Only as long as I'm allowed to use your name, Sasha Kaplan, as an actual character in the book, in the thing. Then you can be the killer.
We'll talk. I actually did get to play in college. They had like a murder mystery dinner, and everybody was like a different character, and I was like, oh, I'll volunteer to be the killer. It was fun.
Note to self, run away from Sasha at all costs.
So on Google Books, this book does not actually have any reviews on it. But I'm curious about Amazon and what the comments are about this book. So I'm going to look them up. But, you know, if this is how he sees women, granted, I'll give him a pass because it's, you know, written in 1983. But, like, come on.
It's still hypocritical, though.
Oh, it's horrible. Well, it's really not, though. Because in his book...
I'm not talking about the actual in-book thing. I'm talking about the fact that if he's going to pass himself out as a woman writing a mystery novel and then coming
what was his, like, pseudonym?
Margaret Tracy.
So it actually has 3.5 stars based on 7 reviews. Let's see what the reviews say.
Were any of them written by his friends or by himself?
I don't know, but I'm going to sort them by most recent. So the most recent review is from 2017. And it says, if this book was a man, I'd marry it. But they gave it 1 star. They said, Mrs. White went beyond my expectations. I loved it. Okay, so maybe that was a glitch. Can you suggest any more books with the same theme? 1980s domestic psychological thriller. You know, that just does not sound like fun. The next two review, the next one is Great Product AAA++, 5 stars. The next person gave it 4 stars and says, White lives a quiet and comfortable life, but hers is nothing like Mrs. ... And then this is a really lengthy review, actually. Looks like he's giving like a summary of the book. Okay, so the concept of the book is not the mystery itself, but it's about Mrs. White uses a brilliant idea. What if someone found out they were married to a serial killer and runs with it? I'm not a big fan of psychological thrillers. I prefer like Mrs. Marple, Agatha Christie style murder mysteries. But the fourth review is actually 2 stars. It says, I found this novel to be predictable and tedious. Mrs. White discovers that her husband is a serial killer. She doesn't want to believe the man she loves can possibly be killing housewives in suburban Connecticut. I'm starting to see a pattern. But she quickly finds out that he certainly is a killer. Unfortunately, there's little suspense, and most of the story is about Mrs. White cooking for dinner, or what she's cooking for dinner. That's hilarious.
Is this Andrew's way of saying women belong in the kitchen or something?
What'd you say?
Is this Andrew's way of saying that women belong in the kitchen?
I mean, if women aren't allowed to hold swords because, like, female pirates weren't a thing... And, like, how many movies are there where there's, like, a female character whose, like, father teaches her to sword fight because she's the only child he has? History is wrong. History says he's wrong. A plethora of wonderful female superheroes, most of whom were created by men, say he's wrong. And yet he still thinks he's right. Like, that is beyond insane to me. Like, I don't understand. And actually, I tweeted to him just for funsies to see if he would reply. At present, he has not. But...
Womp womp.
It's not surprising. I said, his comments, he's like, clearly, like I said, he thinks that this is an explanation. To be fair, in context, and I said, this is actually worse. Because you're saying women can't fight with men in a fictional environment is like, first of all, like history, like I said, I focused on the fictional aspect of it, but like, come on. And my friend mentioned Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, or like MMA fighters. Like on average, like, look, I'm a tiny 5 foot, barely 2, okay? I obviously know that I am not Wonder Woman. Lord Almighty, I wish I was, but I am not. And I don't pretend to be. But to suggest that like a woman holding a sword is suddenly like some feeble attempt to appeal to feminists and to make women into men is just so asinine, I don't even know where else to go with it. And like, it's just insane. And I hope he doesn't actually believe this, but based on what we know of this novel, I'm not really impressed, and to be honest, like, I think he really needs to read up on his history. I think, what was it, Forgotten, what's that book called, Forgotten Princesses or Rejected Princesses?
I think
it's Rejected Princesses, but, if somebody really wants to be, like, special, like, send him that book. It's called Rejected Princesses. It's a book by Jason Parath, who had a Tumblr for a while. I don't know if he's like still has the Tumblr and it's a full website, or if like Tumblr is a separate part of his like general like social media outreach, but he does these like comic strips and these exposés on different women from different cultures, different centuries, and it's incredible, like, the amount of research this guy does. And he's very honest, like, this, the, you know, the backstory for this comes from this source, this is a very obscure source, this is a direct source, like, there's so many cases of strong women. And look, obviously no one is saying that every woman needs to be, you know, an MMA fighter, or every woman needs to, you know, look like Gal Gadot and fight like an MMA fighter or whatever. And if they're saying that, they need to be smacked upside the head.
And you want to know something funny about Gal Gadot?
Gadot.
She was in the Israeli army.
Yes, she was. She was a training instructor.
Yeah. But also, real quick, another bad take that's out there that came out on Saturday. I didn't share this on Facebook or anything because, so Terry Gilliam, from Monty Python, he's promoting his movie, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote, and, Alexandra Pollard of The Independent out in the UK interviewed him to promote the film, which they really didn't talk about the film that much. But Terry kind of did a bad take, and by his own admission, he is offensive, but it's not by fault, but it's not his fault, it's yours, because people work so hard to be offended nowadays, which I actually kind of agree with that comment.
Yeah, I don't think that's wrong.
The comment, though, that I don't agree with is that, the more incendiary of his opinion that the Me Too movement is a witch hunt and that white men are the real victims, that actually it's women who hold all the power, and whatnot. And I'm just reading off like what Alexander wrote. I haven't read into the actual quotes, of what he said, because I have read them. I read it like yesterday, but so here it is. Here's the quotes. So Gilliam said, "There's no room for modern masculinity," from what he's told. "The male gaze is over," he adds, letting his derisive air quotes hover for a moment. He was trying to make a point with Angelica, though, played by Jonah Ribeiro. He's now talking about his movie real quick. Or about movies that he's done. Angelica is a young woman who was in Toby's film when she was 15. He told her she could be a star, but hasn't spoken to her in 15 years since, and her attempts to make good on his prediction have failed. Now she works as a model and an escort. He then goes on to continue saying, "In the age of Me Too, here's a girl who takes responsibility for her state. Whatever happened in this character's life, she's not accusing anybody. We're living in a time where there's always somebody responsible for your failures. I don't like this. I want people to take responsibility and not just constantly point a finger at somebody else saying, you've ruined my life." And I kind of agree, but I also don't agree, because it's like, yeah, you have to be responsible for what you do.
But at
the same time, there are people out there who are trying to make you fail on purpose. There are people who do horrible things. It kind of comes down to
full of horrible people who do horrible. Yeah,
and one of the people that's mentioned in the article is Harvey Weinstein.
And like, not just beyond Harvey Weinstein, like, you can be blacklisted in Hollywood for having a wrong opinion on something, for being proactive on certain causes that publicly that people in Hollywood don't appreciate, for a variety of reasons. And that kind of pressure to succeed in such an environment where like your entire life could be made or broken by this one person, that's a very scary situation to be in.
Yeah, and let me throw these quotes out to you, because I want your thoughts on this. Because again, you and I didn't talk about this beforehand.
Live reaction!
Yeah, exactly. Live reaction.
No torches and pitchforks, please.
So, and then the phrase comes up, witch hunt. He goes, "Yeah, I said, Me Too is a witch hunt," he says, and there's a silence. I really feel there were a lot of people, decent people or mildly irritating people, who were getting hammered. That's wrong. I don't like mob mentality. These were ambitious adults. There's more. There are many victims in Harvey Weinstein's life, he adds, and I feel sympathy for them. But then Hollywood is full of very ambitious people who are adults and they make choices. We all make choices, and I could tell you who did make the choice and who didn't. I hate Harvey. I had to work with him, and I know the abuse, but I don't want people saying that all men, because on Fisher King, two producers were women. One was really good producer, and the other was a neurotic bitch. His words, not mine. It wasn't about their sex. It was about the position of power and how people use it. What is your thoughts on that?
So there's a lot to unpack here. I would say that I think that certain individuals latched on to the Me Too movement in order to kind of devalue it, because it started off as a way to expose the likes of Harvey Weinstein and to give women a voice and to have more women be more comfortable in speaking out about this. And we have seen a lot more of actors, not just women, men too, who are no longer comfortable in, you know, being just dealing with the crap that they're faced with. And that's not also like in terms of sexual assault or anything like that. It's in terms of
just physical abuse in general. I mean, look at the Johnny Depp, Amber Heard stuff. Amber Heard came out claiming that Johnny was beating her, when in reality there came out like 80 videos of Amber Heard beating Johnny Depp.
And you know, there's also issues of racism as well that are now being talked about. And like, I think, you know, people in any society need to remember how to like behave and how to treat other people as human beings. I know that sounds very kumbaya, but however, there is one thing that I did notice that was kind of passed kind of in the midst of the Me Too movement. There were a couple of things that were, there's maybe a couple of individuals, I don't remember who they were, who pointed out that like all of these women are coming out and talking about the likes of Harvey Weinstein, and but there wasn't as much attention, with maybe one exception, that was in relation to what happened to certain men. Like, look at what happened to Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, if you read the story on Brendan Fraser, it is tragic.
I adore Brendan Fraser. I hope he's on my list of people that I really want to meet one day, because he is an actor that I genuinely enjoyed so much when I saw him on screen in anything.
And now he's doing Doctor Doom, or Doom Patrol, I mean, on DC Universe.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Because I do not have.
I don't have DC Universe either, but unlike Netflix, though, you can. I don't know. Netflix kind of does it, but DC Universe has been putting their shows out on DVD and Blu-ray.
That's nice.
So.
So, and I think that there is a lot of pressure. And one of the things that was kind of thrown under the rug is women abusers. And I do think that there are women in certain, whether it's in Hollywood or not, I don't know, I'm not an expert, but that do abuse men in situations and in Hollywood. And, you know, male rape victims and male sexual assault victims are much less likely to come forward. And this is, I don't want to turn this into a PSA, but I think that the struggles certain men have faced in Hollywood, whether that is by other men or by women, also really needs to be talked about.
Well, also keep in mind that there's also, and I can say this from being, because I am a man, there's the mentality of be a man. Men don't cry. Men don't share their emotions. You know, they don't talk about things. They just hold it in. They're the rock, you know, for relationships and all that other stuff. And it's like, but the thing is, though, is like, you know, you and I talk all the time. You know, I'm not that guy. It's like, if something's bothering me, I'm going to talk about what's bothering me. I mean, we started talking the episode about like crying in movie theaters and stuff. And, you know, this is the week of the anniversary of my best friend's passing. You know, damn right, I'm going to be emotional about it. And I'm going to talk about it, because it's healthy to do that. Whereas
I think I am
where it's been drilled into our heads not to do that stuff. And that's the unhealthy thing.
You know, I think I'm very fortunate in the regard that I have grown up in, you know, my father and my brother, who are always very comfortable about, you know, talking. Like, my brother is an amazing example. He's like, he's a little bit like you. He's, you know, a scrawny Jewish kid, but he's incredibly funny. And he does, and he's an example where I think, like, he should teach all boys how to behave. And I don't know if that's like how we were raised or what it is, but he's very open, he's very charming, and he's very sweet. And he is what I like, he's amazing. And I think he's an example of what you're talking about.
I think also what it is like, you know, to piggyback off that is that you take the lessons of what you learned and what you're taught. But at the same time, as times evolve, you have to evolve with the times at the same time. Because if you can't evolve with the times, you're literally becoming like how you joked with me earlier about, like, okay, grandpa with the VHS tapes. It's like with Terry Gilliam, Andrew Klavan, with these takes. And they're,
are you going to do an okay boomer?
No. Okay. But it shows that they aren't willing to evolve with the times, you know, and they want to kind of keep things the way it was.
I don't know. I mean, I would say, I think it's more, it seems to be more that way with Klavan than Guinness, but for Guinness, I would say
Gilliam,
excuse me.
I'm sorry, but Alec Guinness is dead. So he doesn't have an opinion on what today's like.
I mean, for Gilliam, there are some actors that, like, I think there are times when actors or producers or whoever they are should be very comfortable just stating, like, look, I'm not really comfortable to give my opinion on the subject. Like, I don't really want to talk about this. I don't think there's anything wrong with admitting that you don't know or you don't want to deal with the subject matter. Like, there are topics that I don't want to talk about.
Well, keep in mind, Gilliam came from Monty Python. And if you watch anything Monty Python, especially the fact that he was the one who directed Life of Brian, which offended the Catholic Church, like, to him, he treats comedy the way comedy is supposed to be, which is that nothing is sacred. And it kind of goes back to that point where people allow themselves to be offended by anything.
I think an excellent example of this is actually something that happened at, I think, Washington University. In November. So the Washington University, I think it was Washington University. Let me double check. But point being, there was this play that the school was putting on, and the play was based, hold on, let me pull it up. I can't do it justice.
Yeah.
Nope, that's not it. 1 second, it's coming. I know it's somewhere here.
But yeah, while you're searching, the full quote that Gilliam had said is that people work so hard to be offended now. So that was the key quote, which is kind of true, because if you notice, like, Jerry Seinfeld has openly said it, that people are becoming too politically correct and they're making, essentially allowing themselves to be offended by everything. So, but that was the full quote from Gilliam on that fact, that one.
So I can't find it right now, but the point I think is really important regardless. Oh, here we go. Nope, that's still not it. Here we go. So it was Washington College, and it says Maryland's Washington College. The department attempted to stage a play, which was supposed to be, here we go, Washington College cancels anti-racist play because it could potentially upset some people. And I understand that some subject matter can be uncomfortable for people, but just to preface, as far as I understood, this was a parody play. The play is thoroughly anti-racist, anti-KKK, and pro-immigration, but Washington College administration worried that the production could potentially upset members of the campus community. They canceled it 2 days before dress rehearsal. The decision was made by the interim theater chair, Laura Eckelman, with the support of the dean of the college. So they were trying to, according to the administration, they want to balance the rights of freedom of speech with our values of inclusion and compassion. So the play itself, I did manage to find some information on it.
So real quick, so by being open and inclusive, you're not allowing the play that is anti-racism, anti-
KKK and pro-immigration.
Yeah, and pro-immigration. You're being against that.
Well, I guess a production of Blazing Saddles is completely out of the question.
Totally.
But look, I understand uncomfortable subject matter. Like, I genuinely, I still refuse to sit through Schindler's List. Like, I physically cannot watch that movie. But I'm not going to stop anybody else from enjoying this movie. I know it's a great film. I know it's a very powerful film. I know it won an Oscar. I know that the story is incredible and it's based on true story and it's Spielberg directed, so it has to be amazing or something. But I cannot. I cannot. I will not read The Diary of Anne Frank. I could not even sit read Night. Like, I read the first three chapters and the last three chapters, Elie Wiesel, forgive me, but I couldn't do it. Because that makes me uncomfortable. That reminds me of, you know, how close, you know, if the Nazi hadn't been stopped, like, my family would, I wouldn't be here. My parents wouldn't be here. And that stuff like that makes me uncomfortable. But this is one of the oldest liberal arts institutions in the country. So the one of the quotes that really killed me is that the show is about giving a voice to the voiceless, and we have been undermined and received hate for it through the cancellation, said the cast member Will Reed, who had been set to lead the post-show panel discussion that would have explained the play's themes. So
it sounded like they had everything planned out to how they wanted to do it.
So this is what the Secretary of Diversity for the college's student government said. He goes, putting the KKK on stage in a satirical way is not appropriate because nothing about the historical and present day ramifications of the KKK is funny. Clearly she's never seen the documentary on the history of the KKK because I found it hilarious. This is about acknowledging the need for all, not some students, to feel safe on campus. So first of all, it's okay to feel a little bit uncomfortable. Nobody's forcing anybody who is uncomfortable to go and see this play. I'm assuming you have to buy tickets to this play. When a very uncomfortable play that I did not appreciate was being put on by my university that made me personally very uncomfortable, I didn't go. I didn't go. I thought the author was a pretentious psycho. I thought that the play itself was an insult to women everywhere. But I just didn't go.
People forget about that little factor of, like, you decide what you can do. And it's like, Facebook right now, like, let's just not tiptoe around it, but, like, there's some pretty nasty things going on right now in the world. And it's all over our Facebook timelines right now, unfortunately. But there's a great thing that we can do, like what you do with that play. You didn't want to go to the play. So what did you do? You didn't buy a ticket. Facebook, just scroll past it. You know?
So you
have the power to do that.
So this is a two-act comedy by American playwright Larry Shue. Larry Shue was an American playwright and actor best known for writing the two often performed farces The Nerd and The Foreigner. I don't know if he was necessarily Jewish or not, but The Foreigner premiered in 1983 and transferred to Off-Broadway. The central character of Charlie Baker, who while on vacation in Georgia, Hunting Lodge, pretends not to be able to understand English so as to avoid the attention of the other guests. His plans backfire as soon as he finds himself the confidant of everybody there, especially a young man named Ellard, who thinks he is teaching Charlie English. Charlie ends up having to foil the scheme of the local Ku Klux Klan chapter without revealing a secret. As far as I know from this play, and I did a little bit of research like months ago, the KKK are not, they're portrayed negatively as they well should be. Sorry, desperately needed a drink of water. And I don't think all satire is necessarily created equal. I think that there are times where satire does go over the threshold and goes too far, but that is very, very rare in my opinion. One of the things that like I fully believe in, and one of the major lessons I learned from Mel Brooks, God bless him, is that the more you make fun of something, the less power it has. And I don't think enough people understand the meaning of what that is.
How many times has Mel Brooks made fun of the KKK in his movies?
Like at every opportunity.
Yeah.
You have Lily von Stupp singing with the Nazis in the middle of Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
At the end of Blazing Saddles. You have, you know.
You have Gene Wilder and Cleavon Little's characters suckering the KKK, and then like when they're in the attire and they're in line, they sign the papers like, "Oh, Butch, I thought I told you to wash your hands after cross-burning." It's like, because that's the joke, you know? It's like, it's demeaning the KKK.
Right. And like, by this logic, Black Klansmen should never be shown in theaters because it might make some people uncomfortable. Even though that's based on historical fact. And like, look at the producers. Springtime for, like, first of all, I belt out Springtime for Hitler anytime it comes on my phone. Like, not sorry. But the whole point of the producers is not the flop and the success of the musical. It's the fact that Mel Brooks, a Jew in a cast with other Jews, Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane, gets to make fun of Nazis. And the more, and I've heard, there was an article that was published at some point because some local production somewhere was doing the producers. And somebody wrote an article about how like, the more, like, if you make fun of the KKK, of Nazis, you're normalizing Nazis. It's like, no, you're making us less afraid of the Nazis. And if anybody has a right to be afraid, I think it's us.
Yeah, but luckily there's many, many great people out there who are punching Nazis in the face. Currently, right now, as we speak.
As long as they're, like, literal, actually, like, you know, band-wearing Nazis and not just somebody you disagree with, then by all means.
Well, they're not, let's put it in perspective. With the way today's society is, they don't have to wear it anymore.
This is true, but there are still times where, like, I think this goes back to, like, this cancel culture.
Yeah.
Where, like, people aren't allowed to make mistakes anymore. Especially if you're, like, an influencer. Or, even though I hate that term, or if you're, like, a celebrity in some capacity, or you are, you know, just somebody who ends up tweeting something, or if you're an average person and you're on Tumblr and you happen to say something, or to, like, I posted something on my Facebook about The Mandalorian, and people corrected me, and I said, thank you. That's it. Like, I made a mistake. My bad. It wasn't anything big. It was just about the financing for the Yoda toys or the non-Yoda toys. The child. The child, the assets toys. And like, that, it's okay. Like, I don't think anybody has to be perfectly perfect in every way except Mary Poppins. But satire, I think, is very important. I think it is a powerful tool. I think comedy is an immense tool. And I do think comedians can go too far. I think that there are only so many jokes that are most of the time not really all that funny that you can make about pedophilia and rape. But
well, the best one was a story of going too far was Gilbert Gottfried at the Hugh Hefner Comedy Central roast. He did the 9/11 joke because it was like, what, a week after 9/11? And obviously that was like a little too far, but what he did though, and to his credit, he deserves this. He was able to turn it around with the aristocrats joke, you know, and he got the room back. But like, yeah, I remember seeing George Carlin live, and it was actually, the show had been delayed because he had his heart attack. So the show got pushed back, but I actually got to see him do the material with him testing it out. And so he was testing out Modern Man and the Suicide Channel and, you know, all those other bits that were in the It's Bad For You HBO special. So I got to see all that stuff before it made it to HBO. But what I saw live to what I ended up seeing on HBO was a much rougher product compared to what was on HBO, which was a more refined product of his comedy. And like, yeah, some of the stuff that he did there was a little over the ledge, and he could tell, and as he continued to do it, he pulled that stuff out and made it better. So you do get that at least. But that's also because those are the good comedians.
But, you know, I think it's important to be respectful, but I think it is important to understand that, like, just because you make fun of something doesn't mean you necessarily, like, believe the things that you're talking about. Like, just because somebody does a bit about, like, their wife doesn't necessarily mean it's all true. It's a bit. And I think it's okay to, like, relax a little bit and enjoy the show or the trip or whatever it is.
I remember seeing Lewis Black live. I think it was the third time I saw him live. And Lewis Black, Jewish comedian from Silver Spring, Maryland. Oh, well, really good comedian. Does stuff on Comedy Central from time to time. But I remember the third time I saw him live, he gets the round of applause, and he always kind of does something like, all right, well, that was the show. You guys just blew it. You know, you blew your load all over the beginning of the show by welcoming me. And then he starts going on and he goes, listen, I want to say the F word a lot. And if that makes you feel uncomfortable, I just recommend leaving. Lo and behold, like, six people left because he was going to say the F word.
That reminds me of when someone in my family went to see, what's his name? Very, like, old Jewish comedian. Jackie Mason. And, like, Jackie Mason did a joke and he said the F word or something, and somebody just got, like, offended and left. And I'm like, y'all not understand, like...
You know how comedy works, right?
So here's the thing. Since we're on the topic, I actually went with my sister to New York. I was in New York with my sister, and we went to this comedy club. And the first act out of several comedians was a woman. And I'm like, okay, cool, female comedian. She wasn't funny. She was awful. Her entire bit was about wanting to sleep with people and how she doesn't want a boyfriend. She just wants to hook up. I'm like, good for you, but where's the punchline?
Yeah, I've been to a couple comedy shows where it's been like that too.
And, like, that's not to say that women aren't funny. Hello.
I'm saying in general, men or women, but yeah.
I'm saying that. She was not funny. She was atrocious. She was like in some Netflix show or had a Netflix special or something. I don't know. She wasn't funny. Then this kid walked up and he did a bit about, like, something. I don't remember what it was. I think it involved Uber. It was short, but it was funny. The last two comedians was this white guy with a schnoz and this African-American gentleman. They were hysterical. They were so funny. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. Like, I was dead.
Were you crying?
From laughter, yeah. Oh,
okay. But so you can actually cry?
From laughter. But the thing that I think was really funny was part of it when they talked to the audience and the first funny comedian, the white guy, kind of hit on my sister, which is kind of funny, but like jokingly hit on my sister. And the African-American gentleman really made fun of racists and racism, and it was funny. And it was genuine. And like, part of what I love about Jewish humor, and other comedians of other cultures do this a lot, is we make fun of ourselves. No one can make fun of us better than we can make fun of us. Like, how many non-Jewish comedians do you know that could do really good Jewish bits? Like, there can't be that many, if any.
There is Mel.
Mel is Jewish. I mean, non-Jewish comedian.
Oh, non-Jewish. I don't know.
I mean, I can tell you one Jewish comedian who's not funny, and that's Sarah Silverman. And you know, that's not to say, like, I'm not trying to hate on female comedians. There's just some particular women, just like there's some particular men, that are just not funny. I think that like every humor needs balance.
Jon Stewart. He could probably pull off, he's not Jewish and he could probably knock off a whole bunch of Jew jokes.
Jon Stewart isn't Jewish?
I don't think he is.
I think like Jon Stewart who had like his own, what was it, show on the Comedy Central?
Yeah, from Daily Show.
Isn't he Jewish though?
I don't know.
He was born Jonathan Stewart Leibowitz.
Oh, never mind. I'm an idiot. Yeah. Subjects, Jewish culture. Yeah.
Like, you know, there's like, comedy is very difficult. But, and I don't necessarily think that there's certain things you should steer away from, but I think that there's ways to do it that can be funny without going too far. I think anybody who spends their entire bit talking about sex is just boring. You know, if when you have a 10-minute set, if you're going to be talking about sex the entire time, or like this female comedian did, where she just like talked about how much she wanted to sleep because she didn't want a boyfriend, and like.
Okay, so for the record, he is in fact Jewish. I'm an idiot, so I said it right there.
I looked it up on Wikipedia while you were trying to convince me he wasn't Jewish. Stephen Colbert, there you go.
Ah, yes.
But like,
I was in the right ballpark with Comedy Central talent.
But, you know, I wouldn't, like, I'm not going to make Catholic jokes unless they relate to my Jewish jokes. Like, I can make jokes about Catholic guilt versus Jewish guilt where, you know, Catholic guilt is actually kind of amusing. Like, it's that tiny little speck of dirt called guilt, and you just look at it, and you're like, oh, you're so cute. And then you have the giant monster that is Jewish guilt, where your entire existence just makes you feel guilty all the time, regardless of effort. Jewish mothers can make you feel guilty, regardless of whether or not you did anything wrong, with just a gaze. And I have never seen anything more frightening than an angry Jewish mother. I'm sorry, other mothers cannot compete with that. It's just, it's very special. Maybe like Asian moms can compete with that. Like, you know, like very traditional, like moms, but I'm still gonna say Jewish moms probably beat everybody out.
I think Conan O'Brien can get away with it too.
I think he had some decent jokes about a trip to Israel, so I'll give him that.
Yeah.
But out of the plethora of comedians, like, in general, people talk about their personal experiences indirectly or directly when it comes to comedy. They talk about the people that they've met, the experiences that they've had, or they turn them into being funny. And comedy is a very powerful skill. And it can be very powerful. And satire is so important. It's so important. Nobody watches Blazing Saddles and things and thinks like, oh, like this movie is racist. Maybe a few people who have no brains think that, but this purpose of the entire movie is that like racists are idiots. It is completely stupid and pointless to be a racist. But satire is so important, and I hope that we can understand satire. But and I'm like, I'll admit there are like a couple of exceptions to my satire rule. Well, there's a couple of people I've seen. One is a cartoonist who claims his actions are in the realm of satire, and I don't believe that. I'm sorry. It's just his work is, I don't get offended easily, but his work offends me. But there's that. So Andrew's kind of an idiot on this, not just to kind of tie it all back together. Because we went like all over the place with this.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about this type of thing, it's like, hey, let's just take a look at all the other bad hot takes that have kind of come out recently too at the same time. And
yeah,
we just went down the rabbit hole of rabbit holes.
And I want to talk a little bit about that other article from Louder with Crowder, because this notion that like if you look at the way Marvel female characters fight, like you can't tell me that Captain America fights the same way or as Black Widow, or that, you know, Wanda Maximoff does the same thing as Doctor Strange. Their styles are different. Their mannerisms are different. And the fighting is different based on the character and the individual and the actor or actress involved. And oftentimes in combat, And in these action hero situations, the style of fighting that is chosen is really reflective of the character and the actress or actor. So because, you know, Scarlett Johansson is short and like very small framed, and she plays this assassin character, the way that she fights is going to be very specific and very deliberate and almost, I would say, suave, because she's like this international spy. But that's not the same thing as Wonder Woman, who fights like an Amazon warrior because that is what she is. Or like the Scarlet Witch, who does not fight directly in combat, but uses her powers. And speaking of Wanda Maximoff, Kevin Feige confirmed that if Thanos wasn't a coward, she would have kicked his ass all the way to his death.
And I know you're proud.
I'm happy.
For those who didn't know, after Sasha said that, she started dancing.
Honestly, like, Wanda is one of my favorite characters. Not as favorite as her children, but that's a topic for a separate separate episode. I think that the point that I'm, you know, women are different. And like, Andrew, just because you have some kind of issue with a woman holding a sword does not mean you're right. It just means you have some things to work through. Good luck with that. And to tie it back to Disney Plus, which you talked about earlier,
which is what we started off with, essentially.
We started off on. Disney actually pushed up the release date of WandaVision from 2021. And considering Doctor Strange was going to come out in May, and the rumor was that WandaVision was going to come out in March, my guess is March is going to be the release of Loki, and that WandaVision will probably air at the end of this year and carry over into 2021.
The prospect is that Falcon Winter Soldier will be November.
Mm-hmm. So WandaVision has to be December.
And then WandaVision will be December, because what it is that, and this is one of the good things about Disney Plus, is that they treat it like a cable channel in a way, where they do weekly releases. So it's like you actually had, so instead of just having the entire season dropped on you in one go, like the way Netflix does, it actually makes you anticipate the very next, for the next episode to come out the next week. So it's also going to be a build. And I think also what they kind of realized also maybe is that stuff that happens in WandaVision, they want people to actually digest it a bit before more so the Doctor Strange movie, because you don't know if the Loki movie is going to have anything to do, or the Loki series.
We know now that both will tie into Doctor Strange in some way.
Mm.
But yeah, and actually, one of the things that was on Geek Girl 101 yesterday was some leaked footage of audition tapes for Wanda's kids, and I squealed like I was so happy. I love. So if you want, I definitely recommend seeing that post on my blog. It's the full commentary is there. I've made another follow up post to it based on what I've seen on Tumblr, on social, and people's thoughts overall on the audition tapes. I've learned that most people don't really know how Marvel's audition process works, which I find amusing given how much Tumblr like absorbs anything related to Marvel. But yeah.
Alrighty. So
we covered a lot in this one episode.
Yeah. So with that, Sasha, where can the people find you on the social medias?
All of my nerdtastic nerdy posts can be found on geekgirl101.tumblr.com or geekycaptain on Instagram.
And of course, you can follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/x95productions, Twitter at thelindenbaum75, everything from Nerdy Notions, the archive, past episodes, all that fun stuff, everything else that I do as well is on txhthockey.com, and then for the show specifically, txhthockey.com/nerdy-notions. Please buy from my eBay store. I I need money to go along with my severance, please. I got bills.
I have stuff. He's got cool stuff.
Actually, I really do. I just put up a whole bunch of Power Rangers stuff.
Ooh, maybe I'll buy something. On that note, please tune in next time when we continue our, I say tune in next time as if this is live, but please listen to the next podcast when it comes out, because we will be diving back into the cesspool that has sucked away our entire soul and lots of our money, the MCU, not the MCU, the MCU, and we will be starting phase two with Iron Man 3.
Hooray!
And with that, thank you so much if you made it this far, and we will love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening.